Hello and welcome to the Payback Pod, your new secret weapon in the e-commerce marketplace, hosted by Cha-Ching. This isn't just any podcast. This is the playbook for the big leagues. I'm Joel Williams, and I'm here to walk you through the minefield of online retail. We're going to get real with the industry heavyweights, decode the jargon with advertising aces, and break down the barriers to your success, one episode at a time. We welcome on the podcast Dan Simmons, founder of Populate Social, a social media agency dedicated to delivering a results-driven, boundary-pushing, and super transparent approach to social marketing. From high-quality social content in the form of video, photography, and animation, to return-focused paid advertisement, they cover all aspects of social media marketing for their clients. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the Payback Pod. How you doing?
Good, mate. Thanks very much for having me.
That's all right. Have you just moved to London?
Yeah, as of a couple of weeks ago, to be fair. So had our office in Cardiff, which we built up over the last 9 years, and then opened up an office in, well, moved to an office in London about a year ago now, and I've just moved up myself to help build the team up over here.
Excellent. Very good. Very good. It'd be good to get a quick overview of Populate Social and your growth to date, really.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it's been a long history now, I suppose, my whole entire working career so far. I started the business, Populate, obviously back in 2015 when I left university. Essentially thought there was a massive opportunity in the marketplace for a social media focused agency. At the time, social was a completely different space. It wasn't necessarily being capitalized on in the way that it is now. You know, not as many competitors in the kind of global economy with it all. You know, Facebook was obviously the main player, pages were massive, you know, Instagram was pretty much in its infancy, just starting out. So yeah, built that business up over 9 years, as I said, and, you know, worked with some of the biggest names in the world, some wicked clients, but also worked with some challenger brands at the same time too, and kind of built things up right from scratch. So got a huge amount of experience in kind of understanding how to build brands on social, whether that's from an e-commerce perspective or whether it's from a brand perspective. And some B2B stuff as well we've touched on. And then I guess in recent history, last year, well, 2020, at the end of 2022, the business was bought by The Mission Group, which is a global PLC, a group of about 20 agencies that operate in all different fields, ultimately all different specialisms. Populate was kind of acquired into the group as the social specialist with a view to kind of really pushing us forward and helping us tackle that kind of global the global remit of what we're trying to achieve.
Nice. And you started the business straight from Cardiff University as a fellow ex-Cardiff University person. How was that journey for you, kind of going straight from university to starting the business?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd always kind of had little bits of things on the side whilst at university and that sort of stuff.
Club nights?
Yeah, club nights, which is path well trodden, I think, by a lot of entrepreneurs. But yeah, I'd essentially, you know, I think I found that transition okay, in fairness. I was still running the club night stuff at the same time, so it gave me a little bit of income that meant that the business didn't necessarily have to provide for me day in, day out. So that kind of gave me a bit of time and a bit of freedom to focus my energies onto it. And so, yeah, I guess obviously very difficult in the early stages. I was kind of doing every single job under the sun in the business. And built it up kind of fairly slowly initially, right? It was, you know, just me for about 6-7 months. Eventually kind of tapped into some Welsh government schemes where they were offering kind of employees at discounted rates or with contributions ultimately, which is kind of how we first started, then starting to scale the business with people. Ultimately, we're a service-based business, so people are the lifeblood of that. So it's important we kind of try and find the best ones. But
yeah, it's a massive journey, right? You know, in the space of, what do you say, 9 years? Mm. 9 years to go from, you know, leaving university to working with global brands like the North Face. Mm. For brands like the North Face, obviously you've done a lot of work with Brushbox and Coat Paints as well. Probably slightly different for each individual brand, but it would be good to know kind of what your kind of growth plans for kind of global brands are, you know, over the next 6 months.
I think, to be fair, I think we've seen a massive shift in the way that brands are approaching media in general and social in general. So given kind of the journey through COVID that brands have had and the kind of exceptional conversion rates that we saw during that period of time, there was a huge shift towards like performance advertising and people drilling down on cost of acquisition and all that sort of stuff, so that essentially they were optimizing down so much that they kind of forgot about brand And as a result, then you've kind of seen some of the biggest brands in the world. I mean, ASOS put a statement out to the market probably about 6 months ago, where they had basically decided that, you know, enough was enough in that side of things. The business had essentially stagnated and wasn't growing where it needed to be because they were focusing too much on direct response advertising, essentially. And as a result, they're now kind of investing heavily over the next 3 to 5 years on a brand-led approach. And I think that's something that, I guess it's not purely brand, it's a combination of both, but it's something that I think is important, right? And that's, for me, like the stuff that we're seeing with a lot of the brands we're working with, whether it's, like you say, North Face, New Balance, some of the kind of more global brands, they're investing more widely in, you know, brand advertising that really helps build communities. And I think, again, you look at people like Represent, you look at people like Gymshark, these kind of pioneers in the space that are pretty much born out of social. The way they've done that is by doing really clever brand marketing, and then that has essentially built these communities, and as a result, then revenue's generated off the back of it.
Yeah, and I heard you're doing some work with Louis Rees-Sammet at the moment. Talk me through how you're building his brand outside of the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he's a hot property at the moment. I mean, I know he's out in the States at the minute, you know, touring all the clubs. So obviously there's been massive growth in like celebrity-owned brands, celebrity-led brands, which ultimately provides a platform and a credibility for a brand that, and influencer-led brands in some sense as well. It does provide credibility, and I think as a result, there's an audience there that's captive. But, you know, it's important that actually that audience is treated in the right way. And yeah, obviously it's going well for him. They've launched the brand a couple of weeks ago, and that's, you know, we are spending on social, we're spending on advertising, we're spending on brand campaigns, really to try and promote an amazing product that they've created. But actually it is about making sure that it's a sustainable business as well, right? And growing in the best possible way it can for them so that they can then scale, you know, globally with it at some stage. So yeah, it's an interesting one. They're starting pretty much from scratch, right? There are some good people involved in the business, which is helpful, that have got experience in growing. It's a ready-to-drink performance sports drink, ultimately, called Savitar, if anyone's interested.
Yeah.
There's huge kind of opportunity with stuff like that. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're exploring the right channels to make sure that we're getting the cost of acquisition and the cans in hands for people. Yeah. For them, there's a huge challenge around making sure, like, because it's not stocked in retail, they need to get cans in hand, so they need to make sure that it's the acquisition cost of users and getting ultimately digital sampling done is done in a cost effective way.
Yeah, and how are they doing that? As a subscription model, or kind of how does it go? We're doing a lot of work at the moment with Dash Water, who you can now purchase on Cha-Ching. So they're, one of their biggest focuses is obviously looking at the subscription element and kind of driving that on a D2C perspective. They're set up directly on Shopify, which means they can integrate into Cha-Ching in about 2 minutes. Where is Louis Rees-Sammet's brand?
So, yeah, they're on Shopify.
So by the time this is aired, they'll be live.
They'll be on there, yeah.
They
exactly.
Should be, yeah. Correct, yeah.
So I think it is, as you said, like, it is that acquisition cost is key. Subscription is a big part of their business for sure. Repeat purchase, definitely. But there's a mixture, right? I think it's about driving high quality basket values for them and making sure that there's, you know, a long-term stickiness for that customer. But that can be driven by subscription, but equally it can be driven by, you know, single purchase. I think that giving people options is what they want these days. That seems to be the way it is going, and particularly with the economy the way it is and subscriptions and that sort of thing, I think people are making careful choices about what it is they're subscribing to. So the more freedom and options we can give people, I think the more likely we are to get conversions.
Yeah, and what is the cost per acquisition at the moment on the brand?
I think for them, it's only a couple of quid at the minute, which is pretty reasonable. I think it's helpful that he's in the public domain and, you know, he's just been obviously on through the NFL Pathway Program and is now in the news pretty much every day about the clubs he's visiting. So it's handy to be able to kind of retarget some of that content. We are about to launch them on TikTok Shop as well. So I think that's going to be a, you know, an interesting proposition for them and helps them expand into global markets, which will be cool.
And nice. So I guess outside of that brand, I mean, you know, Brushbox has obviously been a massive success for you over the last few years. Talk us through kind of how you took that brand from kind of zero to 100, really, and what challenges you incurred across that time.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a project we worked on probably, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago now. At the time, it was one of the fastest growing D2C brands in the UK. It was essentially a bamboo toothbrush subscription business. And, you know, at the time, there wasn't really anything else quite like it on the market. Sustainability was obviously a key a key trending topic and point of discussion in the world at that point, and still is now, obviously. And there's a few more competitors out there in the marketplace at this stage. So the bit they had raised, you know, some funding initially to launch that business. It was not huge amounts. We're not talking millions, but there was a pot of money there which could be utilized to get new people on board. We looked at different partnerships initially of how they could get to market quickly. So whether that was through marketplaces, whether it's through email databases, whether it's through partnerships with influencers, creators, that sort of thing. And then obviously the paid media part played a big part of it too. So, you know, particularly with a subscription business like that, there is the challenge around like, do we put an offer out on the first month? How long does that last for? Does it mean that you're actually profitable? And actually we went through a lot of learnings with them around the channels that were most profitable. I think we used something called Sweatcoin at the time, which was essentially an app on your phone. You earn money by walking, I think, and exercising.
Yeah, I used to work with them when I was at TikTok. Yeah,
nice.
Quite a good business.
Yeah, great business, I think. And that drove huge amounts of subscribers into the business. What it probably didn't provide was the stickiness that they wanted over a longer term period.
Yeah.
So we found that maybe, you know, investing more heavily into their own acquisition was the best way to go to improve it and actually kind of drive, you know, a better longer term lifetime value of a customer.
Nice. That's fantastic. And I was reading recently that you've been nominated for Global Social Media Agency or Global Social Media Award of the Year.
So we have been shortlisted for a Global Social Media Award, which is for our work with a project kind of on behalf of Mercedes-Benz, which is a global campaign for, they're building a fellowship essentially of young people that have got ideas around sustainability and ideas that they can bring to life to help change the world and improve the world, make it a better place, make the environment a better place anyway, which is cool. So yeah, we operated that campaign across, I think, four continents, like over 100 countries. It was a pretty sizable operation, and they've got some immense visibility now as a result, which is cool.
Have you got any kind of metrics you could share just to the wider audience on that?
I mean, I think acquisition cost on that in terms of, so we were basically taking people from, it was a big awareness play initially. We then kind of funneled it down into starting your application essentially. And then we then retargeted those people that had started their application and trying to get them to complete it. It wasn't necessarily a simple form for them to complete. You know, there's a little bit of energy that needs to go into it to apply for this thing. And so I think we were kind of acquiring applications for around about £20, which is very reasonable when you're looking in global markets. Some markets way cheaper than others. I think that's one massively interesting thing when you're looking at scaling something globally. Like, it is the platforms and the countries that aren't, you know, that are different in each region, which is cool. So yeah, there's some wicked stuff that I think we've learned as a result of that, and kind of can apply that then to future campaigns to make sure that we're kind of driving the best acquisition cost. There are challenges too, like when you're opening up into you know, places like South Asia and that sort of thing, and platforms that aren't
language
available.
Yeah,
language too is a big part for sure. So, but we do that. We do operate across multi-market, so we'll use translation, kind of the translation technology that's in platform, but also we can use translators in local markets, and we've got people on the ground in those local markets that can support.
You got those fantastic local ad policies as well.
Which is always an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously did a lot of work together when I was at TikTok, and you obviously at Populate Social. Outside of TikTok, you know, where are you seeing kind of the biggest growth trend at the moment for brands and advertisers in the industry?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's an interesting question, to be fair, because there is certainly a growing negativity around social, right, in the world, in the marketplace generally. And so I think platforms themselves are starting to kind of twig on to that. And as a result, kind of advertising on certain platforms is probably switching slightly or changing slightly anyway. You've obviously got things like Cha-Ching, which, you know, it's a new player into the market and offers something completely different. Like, the way that you guys are essentially giving control back to the advertisers is an interesting proposition, and one that I think is welcomed probably by a huge number of people, both brands and agencies. Snapchat themselves, like, they've seen significant growth in 2023 with, I think it's something like 300% increase in revenue through advertisers. And I think it's something like 500% increase in ROAS. So yeah, and actually their kind of brand mantra for now is like more Snapchat, less social. And so they're kind of trying to move away from that social media wording and not to be seen as a social platform, which again, obviously, you know, bringing Cha-Ching into the conversation like that, that's exactly kind of where you guys are at, right? It's not a social platform. It's more of a marketplace that helps, you know, get people in front of brands and, you know, shopping in a way that helps save them money and helps the brands out as well.
Exactly. I think one of the biggest kind of USPs that we're offering at the moment, you know, it's no hidden fact that around 23% of, you know, women's fashion is returned, around 16% of any purchase online is returned. Cha-Ching gives the full CPA back to the advertiser in the event of a return. What that means is there's no ad wastage for any brand or advertiser in that space. I can't imagine anytime soon Google are going to give you your CPMs or your CPA money back. That's why we've seen such enormous growth over the last year, really. We're now working with 6,000 UK branded products on the platform, some big players on there, as we've mentioned previously. But as an agency, what do you see, like, what is the main opportunity for yourself and how do you see kind of that growing with your existing portfolio?
Yeah, I think it's more important now than ever to kind of have a really robust reporting process in place to make sure that you kind of can understand that user journey. There are obviously continued changes to tracking and what can be done and what can be showcased. And our clients are asking more and more and more about that and becoming more informed themselves on, you know, what part does each platform play in the journey of that purchase. And so actually getting more visibility over that is key. And like you just touched on there, like you give that visibility in a way that most platforms are unable to do. It's very much a direct transaction that's happening in, you know, in your own world. So that's immense. I think there'll be more of a shift towards that. And I think the more kind of detail we can give people and the more ownership we can give people over the journey that's happening, and then as a result of the areas that they're then investing, I think it's a key point for us over the next couple of years.
Definitely. And I think, you know, within the Cha-Ching Ads portal, which is now live for agencies and brands, so check that out, you have full control. So if you want to have a more profitable campaign on a particular SKU or a particular product, you can then put a lower CPA. If you want to increase your sales, maybe put a higher CPA, because that's how that will occur within the app. And I really encourage anyone listening who hasn't done so already, you know, download Cha-Ching. It's completely free. You can earn between 20 and 40% back on your favorite brands. Hopefully there'll be more brands coming from Populate Social in the next few months.
Good plug, mate.
Yeah, we'll take that. So yeah, Dan, so tell us a bit more about kind of the growth strategy that you had with Coat Paints in particular.
Yeah, so Coat approached us. They're obviously a sustainable kind of paint brand, doing an incredibly good job, actually. Some, I'd recommend anyone to go and check them out. It's really, really cool stuff. They had been successful on Meta, were spending a significant amount of money each month on a customer acquisition on there. They wanted to explore other options and wanted to know whether there were other channels that might be relevant to them. It is not the cheapest paint in the world, you know, as a result of it being sustainably produced, and it's super high quality stuff. They didn't know whether there were other platforms out there that would provide them with the audience that they wanted to engage. We had done a little bit of work in the luxury space on TikTok and thought that it was a good platform for them. So we did some modeling around it and helped them kind of understand that actually investing in it, there was an audience there and that actually, you know, it could be useful to them. However, it wasn't about necessarily pushing the product direct response sales tactics on there. They have these stick-on sample sets, essentially. And so, which they charge for, it's not, you know, it's £5 or whatever it might be, it's super cheap. And that was a really great way into the market for them. So we used that as the initial way in and sold thousands of these things through their site, which then obviously led on to repeat to people actually purchasing the paint. So I think that there's sometimes a thought from brand owners, brand managers, social media managers, whatever it might be, that they got to go straight for the sale. Well, I think actually if we had modeled this out, even that the acquisition cost was super low on these stick-on sample packs, that actually the lifetime value was super profitable for them because they know that people were then purchasing a significant amount of paint off the back of it. So, you know, I think as that evolved then and the brand became more visible on the platform and it built up a bit of an audience, then you can actually start to shift things into actually trying to sell the paint directly and maybe working with some creators and that sort of thing, and maybe some affiliate stuff on platform. But yeah, I think it's a nice example of how a more luxury brand can maybe engage on other platforms outside of Meta.
Yeah, and that true profitability element is massive, right? Another angle and another case study that, you know, I found very interesting when doing some reading into Populate was Gunner Drinks. Would love for you to kind of just expand on that a little bit, really.
Yeah, so these guys are essentially a craft soft drink. They're stocked in most major supermarkets now. They also, through COVID, decided to go to a D2C model. As a result, kind of people like Dash Water, I guess, are a great exponent of this too. They needed some kind of offering that helped them drive sales. Now, they tried without us to drive incremental sales through their Shopify store, but going at full price products. And as a result, they were not generating any income ultimately off the back of that. Like ROAS was super, super low. So what we did was we modeled two separate options for them. One was a 50% off introductory offer, and one with free shipping, and one was a sample pack offer where they redesigned a whole new pack. It was just four flavors that they did, and it was, I think it was £7 price point, something like that. So super reasonably priced entry-level stuff. What actually was really interesting was that the 50% offer was more profitable than the £7 sample pack when you look at the actual long-term value of those customers and the acquisition costs and the ROAS. Which probably on first look probably wouldn't make sense because it was because the £7 pack was ultimately a little bit cheaper. Yeah. But actually, when you look at kind of the longer term prospects here, it did actually work out that was the pack that made some most sense. So I think what it kind of plays into here is getting to know the numbers around the brands and thinking a little bit deeper about, yes, there's an initial fee of acquiring a customer, but what does that look like? Which one of these offers is more compelling for them? Are they having more product maybe off the back of it? So then actually they're maybe more inclined to enjoy the product, or maybe there's life cycles of these types of products so we can actually map out the lifetime value a little bit better. So actually, like, I think there's some clever tactics and understanding that people can utilize and when they're coming up with the modeling around what is it we're going to go to market with for our customers or potential customers, and therefore kind of have better results off the back of it.
Nice. Excellent. I guess before we finish, is there any kind of closing comments or anything you want to kind of share just to the wider audience?
Yeah, I think for me, like, it's a complicated space, right? And, you know, it takes time to create campaigns and create, I guess, profit within businesses. And a lot of people come to us and a lot of brands come to us and they want to make a big shift, whether that's going from kind of 0 to 100 or going from 100 to 200. It's a considered shift from where they are right now. And that takes time and it takes energy and it takes intelligence and understanding of the marketplace, the business. It might mean that people need to pivot and be flexible around what they're doing. I would urge people to kind of explore all of the channels that are available to them, and, you know, whether it is things like Tsching that maybe they've not necessarily heard of or aren't aware of or understand the complexities around things, or whether it is other platforms out there that maybe sit outside it. And hopefully it can kind of give them a visual of like how can they be different in that marketplace compared to their competitors, and how can they be a pioneer that actually is leaning into what is needed on those platforms. So, you know, that kind of sits alongside making content that's native and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, for me, there is becoming a big shift towards owning what you're doing and making sure that you're picking the right platforms for the brand rather than trying to spread yourself too thin.
Excellent. Great closing comments. Thanks a lot for joining us, Dan.
Nice one. Cheers, Joel.
Get ready for that cha-ching moment with every episode. Our signature sound that spells success. This is the Payback Pod, where we turn performance advertising into your powerhouse. Expect nothing less than the best kept secrets of e-commerce, insights that hit you where it matters, and stories from the front line of digital sales.